2 Radio. I'm your host, Jackie Campbell, and it's my absolute pleasure to interview each of our members so you can get to know them just that little bit better. Now, as small business owners, a lot of us know exactly what we do. If someone says to you, hey, what do? You can tell them your why, but that's when you're face-to-face. Everybody's got a website these days. We've got social media, we've got all these things, but you can never just kind of get the words right. I might be able to explain it to someone, but I cannot write it down. Now, we have Lisa. She is from Stella Polaris Copywriting, and she can solve all those things for you, but that's not the exciting part. There's a whole new world opening up for Lisa, and this is what we're going to talk about. Welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Now, Stella Polaris Copywriting, that's a hell of a mouthful.
Yeah, it sure is.
Is it all about the keywords and the engagement? And is there some psychological whizzy-wang behind it?
I love that you asked that question, because really, strategically, there should have been. But no, Stella Polaris was a symbolic name. So right. That was all about becoming the guiding light, the navigational point of reference. Stella Polaris is the North Star in the Northern Hemisphere. And that was really about positioning myself into partly being a point of reference for myself to come back to true north. I'd had a fairly complex career pathway, and I knew I was coming back to a point within myself that was the true compass point for me. So that's where Stella Polaris was born, and keywords hadn't even entered my head when I named the company.
and possibly your I'm not from around here accent gives it away that you were from the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah, absolutely, from the UK.
you do realise we're in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, and I know, so no one knows what it is.
Perhaps Southern Cross copywriting may have been more appropriate. I've actually seen that out there. It's almost a bit naff, and I think Stella Polaris is fun because it does. It's got that point of inquiry, which of course is the point of copywriting. It's like, oh, hang on a minute, tell me more.
Yeah, it's always been intriguing, and there's versions of that story around, you know, where does it come from and why? And funnily enough, although when I first started, like most businesses, to become known, you need people to know what you do. But after a while, once people know you as a good writer, you actually try to go a bit under the radar because you get so booked out so quickly. That it's all good.
A excellent problem to have.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is this, you woke up one day and went, I know, age 11, I'm going to be a writer for the rest of my life. This is my passion. This is what I'm going to do. This is me. Is that what happened?
Not quite. So as a teenager, my epiphany moment was that I want to help other people. Mm-hmm. So very generic. It took about 30 years to work out how I was really going to do that. So.
Right. You know, you don't want to rush into these things.
No.
You've got to consider other options.
Take your time.
Absolutely.
So my first step was into nursing. So that was really like, I want to help people. So let's get on the front lines, roll up the sleeves and help.
But a very traditional path of entry, especially for someone from the UK.
Yeah. But it was a bit of a shock to the system, because I'm not a massively practical person. So nursing is a hugely practical job. I was great at writing care plans that had the best care plans on the whole ward. And also people always felt listened to and understood. Not many medications got given out, not many bedpans got cleaned. You know, it was one of those like, oh my God, Lisa's on the shift.
A little chaotic, but everybody felt loved.
Yeah, everyone felt very loved.
Well, that is an important part, to have that as part of your care plan. It was part of any successful medical thing. I mean, otherwise, why would Patch Adams have been so successful?
And it's like that holistic person was always super important to me. But I got restless in nursing. I knew it wasn't my calling. Went back to university, saw my friends been having a great time while I'd been slogging my guts out, training to be a nurse.
Of course, training to be a nurse is a very practical, on the ward sort of experience in the UK, unlike here where people tend to do that in universities now.
Yeah.
So it's a bit different.
Exactly. This was pre-university training, so it was very much all on the wards. And my friends had gone to uni and looked like they were having a ball. So I jumped back into uni was still free in those days, and I did an English literature degree where I was in my element. So it was back to writing, but it turns out that when you come out with English literature, people say, well, what are you going to do, be a teacher? And I was like, I hate kids, can't stand kids, no way. So
that's always good. I hate kids, nice to know.
So that was out of the question, and so ended up actually going back into nursing, into neonatal intensive care, technically with children, but they are newborn babies that can't say a word. So it's really dealing with the parents.
Okay, nice. Which, of course, is your strength, because you can do the relationship, the discussion, and you don't have to give anybody any medication.
No. And I love the intensity. So I love working in intense environments and the pressure. So the pressure of neonatal intensive care really suited me. Had children myself.
Like, I think you're mad, but anyway, carry on.
Yeah, but once I'd had children myself, I decided I did actually quite like them.
Good. I was going to say, where are we going with this? Don't like children now, I've got some.
And yeah, so once I'd had them, that empathy, which is a really strong element for me, just was, every baby was my baby then in that intensive care unit, and I just needed to step back and have some space.
Yeah.
And at the similar time, we moved to Australia, so that was a natural break for us, two kiddies. And then I trained to be a teacher because
Hang on. I'll have to go back and re-listen to minute three, but I'm sure you said that teaching wasn't your thing and you didn't like children.
Exactly. So I can do some big pivots in my life for sure.
Clearly, yes.
Once I'd had children, I absolutely loved raising kids. I was a stay-at-home mum, I threw myself into it, and it was just the most joyful experience ever. And but being quite a high-functioning person, I always kind of became my professional parent, you know, like always like setting up play corners and doing homemade Play-Doh, and like I made it a big thing. I didn't make it easy for myself.
Right.
So when I came, the kids were at school and independent, I felt that I was ready to go back to a second career, and teaching was a great choice, and I thrived in it. It was really peculiar, going from that point of never going to be a teacher. Loved it. I got permanency very quickly within the school system. I built amazing inclusive communities, and I realised that my natural skill set is communication. Mm-hmm. And that's really what teaching is about. How can you communicate most effectively the ideas that need to be taken on board, but make people feel safe, but also accountable. So I loved teaching, and actually probably wouldn't have stepped away from that, but we had long service leave, my husband and I, and we wanted to travel for 3 months. Okay. And at that point, the teaching system couldn't accommodate that as an unpaid leave, and I had to hand in my note. That was probably the big crossroads.
So because of the lack of flexibility in where you were, mm-hmm. despite the somewhat wiggly road you'd taken to get there, I can just imagine these epiphanies. Don't like that. Oh, yes, I do. Don't like this. Oh, yes, I do. Hang on a minute. But surely that brings into question every other assumption you'd made in your life to that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're constantly redefining and realising that just because you felt like you didn't like one thing, that changes with experience, and it changes with mindset shift as well. Mm. And really what I realised, it wasn't the things I didn't like, it was actually that the factors that make me thrive are high pressure, high intensity, super high functioning in terms of thinking fast, but also people connected, 100% communication based. So when we went traveling for 3 months, I got right back into my writing. I've always had writing as a part of my life since uni, and but I was often the person that wrote your resume or helped you with the speech or the eulogy or whatever it was. But I started writing for myself. We had started a travel blog, and people started following and reading. And I realised, oh, people are actually reading and liking this stuff.
And isn't that a freak out? Oh my goodness, I've got a voice. Yeah. I suddenly have a voice. And I'm not yelling to the wilderness.
Yeah.
People are listening, and I'm actually making change. I'm influencing.
Mm.
That's a scary thing to realise, because it comes with this massive responsibility.
Yeah.
As to then people start believing you and acting on what you're saying. And you're going, oh, gee willikers, I've got to be careful what I say here.
Yeah.
Did you find that writing when you were travelling was far more personal than when you had been perhaps helping people with their speeches and helping with their eulogies?
Yeah, absolutely. So the travel writing was a story of us, a story of it's a story of our personal relationships within our family, the little nuances around, you know, who's bossy and who likes to have everything in a neat row, and who's checking, have you put your socks inside your shoes every night, and who's forgetting to zip up the tent, and who's like, you know, burning the damper on the stuff, you know. So all the little character traits and foibles that came out, that was part of the story. And I realised often it's not about where we are and what we're seeing, it's about how the people are interacting in the story and the comedy that creates, and the sensitivity that brings.
How powerful did you find the actual storytelling element? Obviously creating it is one thing, but is that what people resonated with when you started to share that in a more public environment?
I think that what I've always found was that writing and storytelling helped me to process and find learnings for others. Because there's one thing being interested in our family if you know us, like us, and are part of us, but other people were reading this around the world, and it was the learnings we were taking away. And I think that's what I brought back after the travel blog. I went into, I became a mummy blogger, and I had a fairly successful blog called Mummy to Mum. And that was, again, about our family. So it built on the travel blog. It talked about the relationships, but it also talked about as human beings, what we take away from these things. So I might have had a challenging time, but it was like, what did I learn from that and how are we different as a result? And those were the things that people felt. I often had the comment that I've read your blog and it made me laugh and cry. And it was always that sense of poignancy around, this is funny, but it's also really, I'm choked as well. There was because I was talking about the teenage years and the transition as a parent from being the mummy of little kids to being the mum of kids who kind of don't really want you to hang around with them. So and that
you're changed. Not cool, you're just not cool. Yeah. But you better be with there when I need you, but you're not cool.
Yeah, exactly. And having to step back and release these children that you've looked after for such a long time into the world, that's a big deal, letting go. Mm. And it's also letting go of an identity around who I am as a parent and a mother and what will I become. And that really is the birth of then from there to Stella Polaris from that.
So you took that and you realised that you could write in such a way that resonated with your audience and you could engage them and that you could make a difference either from a help or an entertainment or a something, so people felt either no longer quite so alone. It's all right, Lisa's going through it too. I'm not going mad, I can do this.
Yeah.
Did you find you had a lot of engagement with people writing back to you to say, hey, thanks for that? Or were you literally writing to the universe and hoping that someone heard?
At the beginning, you're writing to the universe, but people start to connect with you, other parents in a similar situation. And I think that progressed as time went on. And especially then, I've got one of my pieces published in an American journal, and that was then really well received. And you know, that focus on, often like I say, that poignancy around when are you letting go and how do you know when something is the last time. You never know when something will be the last time until it's been gone and you look back.
Yeah.
So you never know how to honour those moments. So those were the sorts of things that, they're quite deep stuff, and I found that my real calling in life is around helping people unpack those deep moments, and then from a business perspective, it's out how to communicate that in an honest and authentic way so that people can connect with you as a business owner. And really, that when I look back, that's what that blogging brought out in me, that ability to articulate and reflect and help others to do the same.
Okay. You'd put that as one of your milestone pins in my career. That would be one of those points, as I've suddenly got to a snowball almost where you've got that level of engagement. You've gone, actually, hang on a minute, I can make this into something.
Yes. And I realised that, like, if you've always been great at writing, you don't realise you're great at writing. You think everyone's great at writing. Mm. It's like, for me, writing's like breathing. So, like, you do it, I do it.
Oh, it would assist me. Oh, it's okay. You know your story. You just put your feelings down right from the heart. And I find if I do that, I flood to tears and go, whoa, people don't need to know any of that shit. And they, you know, you all pack that back in its little box. Yeah. I have a dear friend of mine who's a graphic artist, not a graphic designer, but an actual artist. He is amazing. And I remember having these long conversations with him when I go talk about art envy. I can take a decent photograph. I have problems drawing stick figures. And he said to me, but I don't understand why you can't do it. It's just putting pencil to paper, putting the marks in the right place. And you're thinking, yeah, well, that's easy for you to say, numpty. So is this something which can be learnt?
Yeah, and that's the really interesting thing. So I feel very passionately that everyone has a voice and an opportunity to write, but I think what we've done is, unfortunately, in the teaching system and in the world in general, has made people doubt their ability. So although I think that there's a degree of skill, it's like learning to drive, you know, none of us start knowing how to drive and then we all end up as drivers. Some of us are good and some of us are not so good. So I think that writing's a bit like that, right? Some of us are always going to be better verbal and we need to choose a medium that suits us. But writing, often we say we're not very good writers because we fear that we're not doing it correctly. But really, if you're being yourself and you know some simple conversational conventions, because writing online is all about writing in a conversational style. It's no longer about the formal English where everything is in proper sentences and proper paragraphs. It's where all the rules have been broken. And that means that it's accessible to so many more people because it's conversational language. And so if you can write how you talk, you'll be so much more authentic in what you're doing. So yeah, it's definitely a process that you can learn.
And obviously that's something you do, and we'll get onto that in just a second, but as a business owner, or small business owner, or a big business owner, or even just someone who's getting started, what is the best way to engage with your audience? Is it telling about, oh, this is what services we do in a nice way, or this is what products we have in a nice way? But it's more than that, isn't it? It's more a case of going, hang on a minute, how my widget and my gadget and my hoobly goobly, this is how it's going to solve your problem.
Yeah.
How does a first time I want to speak to my audience person even start in that space?
That is a really great question, and something that is a real challenge for people, because often we focus on what we do, but when we start focusing on what we do, we are comparing ourselves to all the other people that say what they do. So there's no way to distinguish ourselves. And so
everybody's got great customer service, I've got the latest technology, I'm good on price.
So we can just level the measuring and just have no way to know why to choose you. What I've learned after that 3 years in copywriting is that it begins with your story. Now, people freak out when you say that, because like you said earlier, I wrote from the heart, wrote my story, I ended up in tears, and now I'm not publishing that.
Absolutely not.
So,
because even a business has a brand story, doesn't it? It's got, this is why we exist, this is sort of, and that's why Apple is so successful. I mean, I don't know really any other brand where people will line up in the cold for 14 hours to buy a new version of a phone that they already own. But the reason you do it is because you want to be part of that story. Being Apple is, it's a bit different. It's living on the edge. Well, it used to be. Now, of course, it's very mainstream. But if you look at their brand story, you're not buying a computer. You're buying an experience. And every single thing they do, every image, everything they write, is all about come and be part of our community.
Yes.
We think differently.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying there? That what this the story and being authentic is about?
Yes. And I think that that's almost like the identity that we aspire to be part of, right, in the Apple brand. I think a lot of small business owners often are soloists or have a small team. So the small business owner is very much their personality and their charisma is the business.
Mm.
So as a small business, we build a brand, but our brand is almost inseparable from us. It's only when we get to that Apple level where Apple has a brand and identity that's separate from the individuals that it belongs to. So I think we have this sort of slightly different experience of brand, and that especially if you're a service-based business, the need for storytelling about you and who you are, that's the only reason we pick people to work with. It's like, I feel connected to you. Why do I, in real life, I feel connected to you for certain reasons around how we connect, what how we're speaking and sitting and the energy. But when you're online, you need to be able to convey that through writing and images. So you've got to try to find story and ways to connect and sharing more of that personal stuff, which takes you back to why did you make the leap? You know, so when we said about that pivotal moment for me around unpacking things and reflecting and learning, that was a pivotal moment, and that brings me back to purpose. So for you, not all of us have a clear sense of why we did the things we do. Often people will say, I just fell into business. It kind of just happened.
Yeah, door opened, I walked through.
Exactly, just took the leap. But there was more going on in your intentional mind than that. You made a decision to maybe leave a place of safety and jump to a place of like potential unknown.
Yeah.
And small business is not the easiest journey.
No.
Why are we still here? We're here for a reason. There's a purpose that's driving us. And when we can unpack the purpose, we can find the why, and then we can build our stories. So thinking back to the practical application in an online context of what content you're going to write on your website and your social media, there's certain stories you want to tell that underline the purpose, and it's the purpose that people are buying into. So that's how it kind of pans out.
Okay. Now, if we've got people who are not very clear about all this, obviously you've got your coaching program now, which is super exciting and getting going, and that draws on your experience and your journey and how you've got to where you've got to, obviously, and perhaps unpack some of that whole, hang on a minute, I randomly just sort of kind of got here. You've obviously done that thinking, so you've got a deliberate path. The coaching which you're doing, does that help people in the first instance unpack their why, or do they need to come with you and go, I know my story, can you help me tell it? Where does it start?
It starts usually with, I have no idea, I know I've got a story, and I have really no idea where it starts and ends and how it began. And so it's that sense of, I know there's more to me than just what I do. I know there's a why behind it, but I'm not really sure what that is myself. And I feel a bit weird that I don't know that. That's kind of that subtext around that. And also, I don't know how to communicate that and how to make it relevant to my business. So the first stop with me is a find your why session. Mm-hmm. So that is about you unpacking the story that is the journey from where you began. So back in the teenage years when I said my epiphany was I want to help people, but it took 30 years to work out how. This is, we often all have a sense of, I knew I wanted this, right? And when we unpack that, so if people might say, I wanted to work with my hands, or I wanted to do something creative, let's unpack that. And what was the meaning in it? And how did it then express itself through your life to find what I call the golden threads that become the why? And you often need that third party to find those because you really are so close to your own story and your own, you know, you don't know why you made the decisions you made, you just felt they just happened. But when you've got someone asking, so why was that, what was the choice? choice and what was the decision and what was the challenge, you'll dig deeper into it and unpack it. So that first session is a find your why session. And then from there, we move into social storytelling. So it's really about
limit setting.
Yeah,
this is what you share, this is what you don't. Have
exactly.
I got that? Yeah, okay, cool.
And there's an important part around,
sounds like the bit I need.
You know, unpacking your whole story, warts and all, and then sharing some of the story that you're comfortable with and ready to share, and also thinking around strategically, where am I taking my clients? What story do they need to hear from me to feel confident to work with me? And finding maybe two or three key strands that we'll then tell stories around on social media and do that social sharing. So mm-hmm. I've just actually got a book come out with my Story Mountain technique featured in it in a chapter.
Oh, cool.
So that's been very cool. So the
Story Mountain,
thank you. Yeah, this week's been a big week. It's been book launch week.
Fantastic.
But the Story Mountain technique helps you to structure in five simple steps how we're going to take people through your stories. So we first of all need to find the stories, create a little collection, and then map them as a story mountain, each one, so that we don't bore people to death because there is a problem there.
Possibly in this sort of kind of environment we've got at the moment, there's so much voyeurism and the television's all about, and you just think, really, I do not need to see, why is this entertainment? You know, I don't need to see the Big Brother version, whatever heck we're up to now. How is that a thing that people want to see every single little bits and pieces? It actually makes me really, I don't watch anything like that. It makes me very uncomfortable to have that much openness. Now, granted, I'm not a millennial and maybe that's the problem, but I like to know people's stories. Obviously, otherwise I wouldn't do this, but there's got to be a point,
yes.
I think, where you go, you know what, I actually don't know you. I kind of know you, and I didn't really need to know what colour underpants you're wearing today, but thanks anyway. And I think you do see that oversharing. So
yes.
Working through that structured process with a storytelling with a purpose almost.
Yes.
This is the point of doing what we're doing. This is how, not we're manipulating our potential clients with it, but creating connection, creating resonance.
Yeah.
That you can say, radio, cool, this is someone I do want to work with, or this is someone that
yeah.
I don't.
And I think it's that strategic storytelling. So we're going to unpack the stories, and then we're going to make them work for us strategically. Like, all our content needs to be strategic, and often on social media we can be quite reactive.
Mm.
But actually, if we're thinking around the stories we want to tell, we're sharing stories on purpose, in a purposeful way, like you say. And there's a sweet spot between oversharing and undersharing.
Yeah.
So sometimes you can have so little of personal story sharing in there that you don't even know the person at all. You feel quite distant from them.
Mm.
And then the opposite, which is like too much.
It's like, whoa.
Too much, yeah. And so it's just being really strategic around that. And it's hard to know what is too much as well when you're on your own in it.
And I guess also that would depend very much on your audience. Because if you were in a mumpreneur type environment where your mothers are speaking to other mothers, it's perfectly acceptable to share my baby's poop stories.
Yeah.
Though in a business environment, unless you actually, that's your target audience, perhaps that's a little bit irrelevant, or that would certainly turn off if I was selling, you know, coaching to move real estate agents from successful to six-figure commissions. Sharing my baby's poop story probably wouldn't really be useful, though amuses me, possibly isn't that environment.
Yeah.
So obviously that's something you can assist with there.
And that's really the purpose and the audience are sitting tandem, hand in hand. But I always start with purpose and story, because it's important to get grounded in who we are and what we stand for. And then it's important to align that with audience. And so I've got some clients at the moment who are very analytical clients, like IT clients, and their audience, though, so they feel quite uncomfortable talking about anything other than facts.
Mm.
So to push them into storytelling is around saying, well, your audience needs to connect with you on this level. So yes, we'll talk about facts, but we also need to have some level of connection on a personal level. So if they're not really loving that process because they want to stay in the factual zone, but their audience wants some personal stuff.
I don't want them to know that I've got a dog. They need to know that the widget of the hoosie has got a 93 gigaflopsy whatever, and you're going, yeah, but what does that do? Get it completely. So if people want to connect with you, Lisa, what's the best way to do this? Obviously you've got a whole stack of ideas out there, the blogs that they can read to connect and understand a bit mm-hmm. more about how you work in this space, which of course will help them assist to find out whether you're the right person to help them on their journey. Best way to do that?
On the website, I've got an option for people to take a look through my story workbook. So there's a free resource, Tell Your Story Workbook, mm-hmm. and that will step you through with a really great sequence of support emails that follows how to start unpacking your origin story. So this is really around what brought you into business? What was that moment and how did it shape out for you? Once you've gone through that, you'll know sort of really, did I feel really comfortable with that and do I need some help? So if you visit the website, which is lisakniebe.com.
Better spell Kniebe?
K-N-I-E-B-E. Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. No, not an easy one. That's like Stella Polaris.
Yeah. At least you can Google that. Yeah, carry on.
Yeah, so on the website, you'll have there's some information, some blogs, and then also this free resource, which will really get you started in that storytelling zone. Mm-hmm. And then I've got some exciting packages launching in November, which are around social storytelling. So we're strategically positioning our story, especially on Facebook, because as we network in Facebook groups, there are lots of times where we'd like to share our story, but how much is too much? Mm. And really, are we taking anyone anywhere? So yeah. It's like keeping that strategic focus on what we're sharing. So yeah, that's the first point of call.
That sounds absolutely brilliant and very sensible. So excellent luck with your coaching. It sounds like
Thank
I can't see how this won't be a success, but launching new things is always exciting.
Yes.
And it's always just a little bit scary as well. But
yeah.
Listen to you, I can't see how it's not going to be brilliant.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for your time.
Awesome. Thanks, Ben.
Cheers. Thanks for joining us on District 32 Radio. If you'd like to know more, please head across to our website, district32.com.au.